National Public Radio presents a Hollywood Theater of the Ear production, Beyond 2000. A radio series devoted to stories of the next millennium. Now, here is your host, the award-winning writer and critic, Harlan Ellison.
In this installment of Beyond 2000, Mr. Robin Williams, the well-known star of stage, screen, radio, radar, and crabgrass, in Repent, Harlequin, said the TikTok Man, by me. Mass of men serve the state thus, not as men mainly, but as machines with their bodies. They are the standing army and the militia, jailers, constables, posse comitatus, etc. And in most cases, there is no free exercise whatever of the judgment or of the moral sense. But they put themselves on a level with wood and earth and stones. And wooden men can perhaps be manufactured that will serve the purpose as well. And such command no more respect than men of straw or a lump of dirt. They have the same sort of worth as horses and dogs. Yet such as these even are commonly esteemed good citizens.
Good times, Senator.
Tight moments, Armstead.
Others, as most legislators, politicians, lawyers, ministers, and office holders.
Good time, Congressman.
Fine minutes, Armstead.
Serve the state chiefly with their heads. And as they rarely make any moral distinctions, they are as likely to serve the devil without intending it as God.
Buzzing the sidewalks.
Very few, as heroes, patriots, martyrs, reformers in the great sense, and men.
Don't break stride.
Serve the state with their consciences also.
They're pulling up.
And so, necessarily resist it for the most part.
Jelly beans!
Jelly beans!
And they are commonly treated as enemies by it.
Jelly, for Kronos' sake, beans.
Henry David Thoreau, Civil Disobedience, 1849.
Someone swoops down over the city in an airboat and bombs the population with jelly beans.
It is now the well-ordered year, 2392, Daylight Universal Saving Time.
$150,000 worth, sir. The situation analyst did exhaustive logarithmic projections.
Where did he get the money? That's what I'd like to know.
For that matter, where did he get the jelly beans? According to the neurohistorians, no one's manufactured jelly beans for over 100 years.
What are they? What are they for?
They had no function. They called them treats. Massive criminal time waste.
But isn't that grotesquely anti-clock? Wasting all those... What's a treat?
Shut up. My time-wise concern is that this anti-clock interruption delayed the slidewalks of the entire metro area by a full 7 minutes. The schedule is off by 7 minutes. That's what's important. Am I correct? Am I time-wise?
Oh, yes, Mr. Timekeeper.
Yes. The Master Timekeeper, also called the TikTok Man. In fact, mostly called the TikTok Man. But of course, not to his mask. Never to his mask.
7 warm minutes. Lost. strangled at birth. Dear, good little minutes. Gone forever.
You don't call a man a hated name. Not when that man behind his mask is capable of revoking the minutes, the hours, the days and nights, the years of your life.
The master's schedule thrown off by a full 420 exquisitely honed seconds.
The system had been 7 minutes worth of disrupted. It was a tiny matter, one hardly worthy of note. But in a society where the single driving force was order and unity and symmetry and promptness and clock-like precision and attention to the clock, reverence of the gods of the passage of time, it was a disaster of major importance.
There is jangle in the smooth flow. Time is being wasted. Who is responsible for this outrage?
The file there gives his name, Master Timekeeper.
I've seen the name. Oh. It is a name that tells me what he is, but not who he is. The time card I'm holding in my left hand has a name on it. Harlequin. But it is the name of what he is. A malcontent, a trickster, a clown. But not who he is. The cardioplate in my right hand is also named, but not whom named, merely what named. Before I can exercise proper revocation, I have to know who this what is.
Oh, yes, indeed, sir.
Time-wise, it is jangle.
Nasty, slovenly, wasteful.
So, who is this Harlequin?
They're after you, Everett. Look at this.
That is really disgusting. Disgusting and highly improbable.
No, if I've warned you once, I've warned you ages worth.
Oh, after all, this isn't Day of the Desperado. A wanted poster for crying out loud. We're going to get him.
You speak with a great deal of inflection.
Well, it's not inflection. It's imitation, really. It was an old imitation.
You've got to be careful.
I'm sorry, pretty Alice.
No need to be sorry. You're always saying I'm sorry. Oh, you have such massive guilt, Everett. It's really very, very sad.
I'm sorry. Oh. Well, I don't mean I'm... I have to go.
No.
Out. Well, I have to do something. It'll only take 5 minutes.
Oh, Everett.
Six. Seven.
For Chrono's sake, Everett. Can't you stay home just one night? Must you always be out in that ghastly clown suit, jingling those bells, running around annoying people?
You don't like my bells?
No. Not the bells, 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 bells. Murmur. What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just an unconscious mnemonic I make when I'm idling.
No, it's a maddening silliness is what it is.
I have to go.
Oh.
8 minutes, not a nanosecond longer.
No, wait. It's the fax box. Oh, it's about you, of course. You're ridiculous. Honey, now the TikTok man is trying to find you.
I don't care. I'm going to be out late again. Just 10 minutes. About 10.
Hmm? Oh.
And you speak with inflection, too.
Oh, you're ridiculous.
Okay.
For Chrono's sake. What?
I'll be back about 10:30.
Right. Why do you tell me that? Why? You know you'll be late. You know it. You're always late, so why do you tell me these dumb things?
I'm sorry.
A desk pad. Day for day and turn each day. 9 o'clock, open the mail. 9:45, appointment with planning commissioner. 10:30, discuss installation progress charts with JL. 11:45, pray for rain. Noon, lunch. And so it goes.
I'm sorry, Miss Grant, but the time for interviews was set at 2:30, and it's almost 5 now. Sorry you're late, but those are the rules. You'll have to wait till next year to submit an application for this college again.
And so it goes.
The 1010 local stops at Cresthaven, Galesville, Tonawanda Junction, Selby, and Farnhurst. but not at Indiana City, Lucasville, and Colton, except on Sunday. The 10:35 express stops at Galesville, Selby, and Indiana City, except on Sundays and holidays.
And so it goes.
I couldn't wait, Fred. I had to be at Pierre Cartin's by 3. And you said you'd meet me under the clock in the terminal at 2:45, and you weren't there, so I had to go on. You're always late, Fred. If you'd been there, we could have sewed it up together, but as it was, well, I took the order alone.
And so it goes.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Atterley, in reference to your son Gerald's constant tardiness, I'm afraid we will have to suspend him from school unless some more reliable method can be instituted guaranteeing he will arrive at his classes on time. Granted, he is an exemplary student and his marks are high, but his constant flouting of the schedules of this school makes it impractical to maintain him in a system where the other children seem capable of getting where they're supposed to be on time.
And so it goes.
You cannot vote unless you appear at 8:45 a.m.
I don't care if the script is good. I need it Thursday.
Check-out time is 2 p.m.
You got here late. The job's taken. Sorry.
Your paycheck has been docked. 20 minutes time lost.
What time is it? I gotta run.
And so it goes. So it goes. So it goes. Goes, 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 goes. And one day, we no longer let time serve us. We serve time and willingly let ourselves be duped into becoming slaves of the schedule, worshippers of the sun's passing, bound into a life predicated on corporate business restrictions because conglomerates rule governments and the companies know time is money and the system will not function if we don't keep the schedule tight until it becomes more than a minor inconvenience to be late. It becomes a sin and a crime, and then a crime punishable by...
Effective 15 July 2389, 12 midnight, the office of the Master Timekeeper will require all citizens to submit their time cards and cardio plates for processing, in accordance with Statute 555-7-SGH-99, governing the revocation of time per capita. All cardio plates
what they had done was to devise a method of curtailing the amount of life a person could have. If he was 10 minutes late, he lost 10 minutes of his life. An hour was proportionately worth more revocation. If someone was consistently tardy, he might find himself on a Sunday night receiving a communique from the Master Timekeeper stating...
Your time has run out. You will be turned off high noon Monday. Please straighten your affairs, sir, madam, or bisex.
And so, by this simple pro forma administrative interdiction, utilizing a scientific process we would explain in satisfactory detail were it not a dearly held secret of the TikTok man's office, the system was maintained.
The flow is without jangle. Tick and tock. Tick and tock.
It was the only expedient thing to do, because, after all, there was a war on. But wasn't there always a war on? And so, just for example, at random...
Yes?
Mrs. Delahanty, Mrs. Marshall Delahanty.
Yes?
Executive Office of the Master Timekeeper, this is for your husband.
Oh, no, not the TikTok.
For your husband, the late Marshall Delahanty, who will be late no more. Our official condolences.
His wife received the turnoff notification,
and she knew what it was even without blowing it unsealed. It was a billet doux of immediate recognition to everyone in these timely times. Marshall Delahanty tried to run. Early the next day, when turnoff time came, he was already deep, deep in the Canadian forest, 200 miles away, and the office of the TikTok man blanked his cardioplate. One light went out on the sector map in the office of the master timekeeper while notification was entered for fax reproduction, and Georgette Delahanty's name was entered on the dole rolls till she could remarry, and that's all the point that need be made. Except don't laugh, because that's what would happen to the Harlequin if ever the TikTok man found out his real name. This isn't funny.
The Harlequin is hereby ordered to appear before the master timekeeper.
The TikTok man's order was broadcast across every channel of the communications web. He was ordered to be there at 7, damn it, on time. And they waited. And they waited.
7 o'clock and no sign of him.
And they waited, and they waited.
Moonlight in Vermont.
There he is.
10:32 in 21 seconds.
Mermy.
What's a mermy?
What's a Vermont?
Harlequin, vanished. They had all been waiting since 7, and it wrecked hell with their schedules. So the question remained...
Who is this Harlequin?
He had fired off the firecracker rockets that said...
Attention! Attention, shoppers! I will attend the 115th Annual International Medical Association Convention at 8 p.m. precisely. I do hope you all will be able to join me.
Of course. Naturally. Yeah, sure, of course. As expected, the authorities came.
It's 7:40, Clockmeister. Will your men be ready on time?
Don't fret your sweet, sweet second, Doc. This loony's always late. We got plenty of time to prepare our traps.
Traps?
Yeah, spider web restraints, they're called. Mine's almost ready. Is he just a slash? Delicate adjustment?
Harlequin so unnerved the authorities with his sudden, loud, and early entrance that their own moisturized encirclement webs sucked closed. And they were hauled up, kicking and shrieking, high above the amphitheater's floor.
Watch out for the chandelier, boys. Take 5. No, take 15. Just hang out up there in the rarefied. Sorry to interrupt your solemn conclave, fellas. Just had so much time on my hands, it was either wash him or let him drip all over you. Mercy, mercy. Hey, with friends like me, who needs enemas?
The physicians roared with laughter and accepted the Harlequin's apologies with exaggerated bowing and posturing.
I want to say to all the gynecologists, guy later to meet ya.
And a merry time was had by all.
At your service.
We thought the Harlequin was a regular foufarrant in fancy pants. All that is, but the Clockmeister cops, who had been sent out by the office of the TikTok man, they hung there like so much dockside cargo, hauled up above the floor of the amphitheater in a most unseemly fashion. The shopping level of the city was thronged with the Thursday colors of the buyers, women in canary yellow chitons, and men in pseudo-Tyrolean outfits. Jade green was the color this season, fit very tightly, save for the balloon pants.
Mermaid, 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 it is I. Look towards the sky, give me a wink. I'll try to make you think.
When the Harlequin appeared in the still-being-constructed Dyson Dome of the new Efficiency Shopping Center, his bullhorn to his elfishly laughing lips, everyone pointed and stared and began running late, and he berated them from atop the spire.
Why let them order you about? Why let them tell you to hurry and scurry like ants or maggots? Take your time. Saunter a little. Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the breeze.
Let life carry you at your own pace. Travel at the speed of life. Don't be the slaves of time. It's a hell of a way to die. Slowly by degrees.
Who's the loony?
A crackpot.
A wacko pervo devo.
A fashion disaster, if you ask me.
Oh, wow. I'm going to be late. Hip-hop, tick-tock.
Tick-tock man. With inefficiency.
And the construction gang on the shopping center received an urgent call.
Yeah.
This is the office of the master timekeeper. A dangerous fugitive known as the Harlequin is atop your spine. We need your immediate aid in apprehending him.
No can do, pal. We'd lose time on the construction schedule. We don't want to get docked. You know how it is. Tick-tock, tick-tock.
Down with the tick-tock man. Down with the tickster.
Le toc.
Der tick-tock mensch.
But the TikTok man managed to pull the proper threads of government webbing, and the gang was told to cease work and catch that nitwit up there on the spire, up there with the bullhorn. So a dozen and more burly workers began climbing into their construction platforms, releasing the agrav plates and rising towards the Harlequin.
Did they get him?
No, Master Timekeeper.
No? Did you say no? Am I hearing no?
Yes, sir, you're hearing no. He disappeared very quickly, very efficiently.
Vanished, just poof, like that, sir.
No one was hurt, though, sir.
No one was hurt? The shopping cycle was thrown off by hours. Hours. The purchasing needs of the system fell so far behind that measures had to be taken to accelerate the cycle for the rest of the day. But it got bogged down and speeded up, and they sold too many float valves and not nearly enough wedlers, which threw off the Popley ratio, which necessitated rushing cases of spoiling smasho to stores that usually only need a case once every 3 or 4 hours. Shipments were bollocks, transshipments misrouted, even the swizzle skid industry felt it.
That stock in swizzle skids.
I have your cardio plates here in my left hand. Do you see them? Do not come back till you have him.
Oh, yeah.
And not a sweep second sooner.
Oh, yeah. Your lima beans are done.
Oh, sweet, sweet, sweet pretty Alice.
Eat your lima beans.
What an absolutely sweet, sweet, sweet week and a half or so it's been.
If you don't eat your lima beans, they'll get soggy.
I hate lima beans. Have you been catching the tall screen news reports? Did you see me at the Dyson Dome,
yes,
huh?
Yes, you were humiliating. Lima beans are good for you. They strengthen the promptness tissues and social responsibility glands.
They cause night blindness, the staggers, rinderpest, beriberi, hoof and mouth disease, Dutch elm blight, monkey mass, and uncontrollable flatulence. I wasn't even a little bit humiliating. I was wonderful. A hero of the people.
Oh, if they catch you, they'll turn you off, Everett, and me along with you. Because I love you, and I live with you, and I'm scared of you.
Honey, please, I'd never let anybody hurt you, pretty Alice. I swear it. Look. I'm eating a lima bean.
I'm not a bad person. I never asked for this. It's terrible. I'm afraid all the time. All I ever wanted was a new Wegler, a few Popley, and a quiet life. Why are you doing this to me?
I'm not doing it to you, honey. I'm doing it to stop what they're doing to us. What we've become. This kind of living is what's terrible. I have to go.
Oh, Everett, no.
But I'll be back in a little while. Well, maybe more than a little while. Will you wait up for me?
I have to. I'm afraid to close my eyes.
More moments till I come back.
Don't spit out the lima beans in the elevator.
Do not come back till you have him.
They used dogs. They used finks. They used probes. They used cardioplate cross-off. They used peepers. They used bribery. They used stick tights. They used intimidation. They used torment. They used torture. And they used morphix. They used cops. They used search and seizure. They used Phaleron. They used betterment incentive. They used fingerprints. They used the Barthillon system. They used DNA. They used cunning. They used guile. They used treachery. They used Raoul Mitgang, but he didn't help much. They used applied physics. They used techniques of criminology. And what the hell? They caught him.
Everett Seamarm, you're under arrest for the crime of sluggardliness, tardiness with lateness aforethought, terminal procrastination, chronic belatedness, disturbing the peace, and contempt of system. You have the right to remain silent.
After all, his name was only Everett Seamarm. A little fella, and he wasn't much to begin with, except a man who had no sense of time, but rather more courage than most average citizens.
Repent, Harlequin.
Get stuffed.
You've been late a total of 63 years, 5 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, 12 hours, 41 minutes, 59 seconds, 0.036111 microseconds. I'm going to turn you off.
Well, scan someone else. I'd rather be dead than live in a world with a boogeyman like you.
It's my job.
You are nothing but a messenger. You are so full of it.
You are a tyrant! You have no right to order people around and kill them if they show up late.
You can't adjust. You can't fit in.
Well, unstrap me, bright eyes, and I'll fit my fist into your mouth.
You're
that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Non-conformist.
Oh, no. Say it isn't true, Joe. That didn't used to be a felony, Daddy.
It is now. Live in the world around you.
I hate it. It's a terrible world.
Not everyone thinks so. Most people enjoy order.
Oh, I want to be alone. I don't. And most people I know don't.
That's not true. How do you think we caught you?
Because I let you.
A girl named Pretty Alice told us who you were.
No, she didn't. That's a lie.
It's true. You unnerve her. She wants to belong. She wants to conform. I'm going to turn you off.
You're an idiot.
Repent, Harlequin.
Never get stopped.
Take him away.
So they sent Everett Seamarm to Coventry. And in Coventry, they worked him over. It's just like what they did to Winston Smith in 1984, which was a book none of them knew about. But the techniques are really quite ancient. They sort of did it to Everett Seamarm.
What's your least favorite thing, Everett?
Tick-tock, man.
That's a person, not a thing.
So you say.
Come on. What's your least favorite thing of all? Could it be this?
No.
Or this?
No.
What about soggy lima beans?
No, no, no.
Or this?
At the sound of the tone, the time will be...
No, 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 no.
Or perhaps... maybe... this.
And one day, quite a long time later, the Harlequin appeared on the communications web, appearing elfin and dimpled and bright-eyed and not at all brainwashed. And he said,
I was wrong. It is a good, a very good thing indeed to belong, to be right on time, hip-ho, and away we go.
See, he was just a nut after all.
If that's the way the system is run, then let's do it their way.
Yeah, it don't pay to fight City Hall.
You mean the Tick-Tock Man?
Yeah, him too.
Thus, Everett Seamarm was destroyed. Which was a loss because of what Thoreau said earlier. But you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. And in every revolution, a few die who shouldn't, but they have to, because... that's the way it happens. And if you make only a little change, well, then it seems to be worthwhile.
Excuse me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but you are 3 minutes late. The schedule is a little bit off.
That's ridiculous. Check your watch.
You have been listening to Harlan Ellison narrating his story, Repent, Harlequin, Said the Tick-Tock Man, adapted by Mr. Ellison and Yuri Wasowski. You have heard in the cast Patria Burchard as Pretty Alice, Artie Johnson and James Otis as the Tick-Tock Man's henchmen, Stefan Rudnicki as the Tick-Tock Man, and Robin Williams as Harlequin, with Ira Burton, Hamilton Camp, and Laura Kellogg. The story was produced and directed by Yuri Wasowski, with Warren Dewey as sound designer. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Local underwriting is provided by European Sleepworks, who design their own mattress in the European style, with adjusting wood slat foundations, English spring coils and microcoils, and natural latex foam, on the web at sleepworks.com. We'll return to NPR Playhouse very shortly.
Responding to widespread complaint, the federal government has contracted with a private company to help make standing in airport lines less irritating. This company's got a lot of experience with both lines and irritation. I'm Peter Sagal. Get ready for animatronic robot security guards singing It's a Small Concourse After All. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
We'll have Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me at the end of NPR Playhouse. It's going to be at about 10:30 here on KQED-FM in San Francisco.
Here once again is your host, Harlan Ellison.
There have been possibly thousands, well, certainly hundreds, of stories that echo and resonate and outright pilfer from this famous fable by the waters of Babylon. But when Stephen Vincent Benet sat down to write this one, he was tilling a fresh field. Consider context more than a half century later as Stephen Vincent Benet pauses by the waters of Babylon.
The north and the west and the south are good hunting ground, but it is forbidden to go east. It is forbidden to go to any of the dead places except to search for metal, and then he who touches the metal must be a priest or the son of a priest. Afterwards, both the man and the metal must be purified. These are the rules and the laws, and they are well made. It is forbidden to cross the great river and look upon the place that was the place of the gods. This is most strictly forbidden. We do not even say its name, though we know its name. It is there that spirits live and demons. It is there that there are the ashes of the great burning. I am the son of a priest. I have been in the dead places near us with my father. At first, I was afraid. When my father went into the house to search for the metal, I stood by the door and my heart felt small and weak. It was a dead man's house, a spirit house. It did not have the smell of man, though there were old bones in a corner. But it is not fitting that a priest's son should show fear. I looked at the bones in the shadow and kept my voice still. Then my father came with the metal, a good strong piece. He looked at me with both eyes, but I had not run away. He gave me the metal to hold. I took it and did not die. So he knew that I was truly his son and would be a priest in my time. After a time, I myself was allowed to go into the dead houses and search for metal. So I learned the ways of those houses, and if I saw bones, I was no longer afraid. The bones are light and old. Sometimes they will fall into dust if you touch them, but that is a great sin. I was taught the chants and the spells. I was taught how to stop the running of blood from a wound, and many secrets. A priest must know many secrets. That was what my father said. If the hunters think we do all things by chance and spells, they may believe so. It does not hurt them. I was taught how to read in the old books and how to make the old writings. That was hard and took a long time. My knowledge made me happy. It was like a fire in my heart. Most of all, I liked to hear of the old days and the stories of the gods. I asked myself many questions that I could not answer, but it was good to ask them. At night, I would lie awake and listen to the wind. It seemed to me that it was the voice of the gods as they flew through the air. We are not ignorant like the forest people. Our women spin wool on the wheel. Our priests wear a white robe. We do not eat grubs from the tree. We have not forgotten the old writings, although they are hard to understand. Nevertheless, my knowledge and my lack of knowledge burned in me. I wished to know more. When I was a man, at last, I came to my father and said, "It is time for me to go on my journey. Give me your leave." He looked at me for a long time, stroking his beard. Then he said at last, "Yes, it is time." That night, in the house of the priesthood, I asked for and received purification. My body hurt, but my spirit was a cool stone. It was my father himself who questioned me my dreams.
"Look into the smoke of the fire and tell me what you see." "It is always what I see. A river, and beyond it, a great dead place, and in it, the gods walking." "This is a strong dream.
It is mine."
"It may eat you up."
"I am not afraid."
"So be it. I touch you on the breast and the forehead, and I give you these, a bow and 3 arrows. Take them. It is forbidden to travel east. It is forbidden to cross the river. It is forbidden to go to the place of the gods. All these things are forbidden." "They are forbidden, my son. Once I had young dreams. If your dreams do not eat you up, you may be a great priest. If they eat you up, you are still my son. Now, go on your journey."
I went fasting, as is the law. My body hurt, but not my heart. When the dawn came, I was out of sight of the village. I prayed and purified myself, waiting for a sign. The sign was an eagle. It flew east. Then I knew I was meant to go east. I knew that was my journey. When the night came, I made my fire and roasted meat. It is 8 suns' journey to the east, and a man passes by many dead places. The forest people are afraid of them, but I am not. Once I made my fire on the edge of a dead place at night, and next morning, in the dead house, I found a good knife, little rusted. That was small to what came afterward, but it made my heart feel big. Always when I looked for game, it was in front of my arrow, and twice I passed hunting parties of the forest people without their knowing. So I knew my magic was strong and my journey clean, in spite of the law. Toward the setting of the 8th sun, I came to the banks of the great river. It was half a day's journey after I had left the God Road. We do not use the God Roads now, for they are falling apart into great blocks of stone, and the forest is safer going. A long way off, I had seen the water through trees, but the trees were thick. At last, I came out upon an open place at the top of a cliff. There was the great river, below, like a giant in the sun. It is very long, very wide. It could eat all the streams we know and still be thirsty. Its name is Odis-Sun, the sacred, the long. No man of my tribe had seen it, not even my father, the priest. It was magic, and I prayed. Then I raised my eyes and looked south. It was there, the place of the gods. How can I tell what it was like? You do not know. It was there, in the red light, and they were too big to be houses. It was there with the red light upon it, mighty and ruined. I knew that in another moment the gods would see me. I covered my eyes with my hands and crept back into the forest. When the sun rose, I thought, my journey has been clean. Now I will go home from my journey. But even as I thought so, I knew I could not. If I went to the place of the gods, I would surely die. But if I did not go, I could never be at peace with my spirit again. It is better to lose one's life than one's spirit, if one is a priest and the son of a priest. Nevertheless, as I made the raft, the tears ran out of my eyes. The forest people could have killed me without fight if they had come upon me, but they did not come. When I was very near, my raft struck and turned over. I can swim in our lakes. I swam to shore. There was a great spike of rusted metal sticking out into the river. I hauled myself up upon it and sat there, panting. I had saved my bow and two arrows and the knife I found in the dead place, but that was all. When I had dried my bowstring and restrung it, I walked forward to the place of the gods. It felt like ground underfoot. It did not burn me. It is not true what some of the tales say, that the ground there burns forever, for I have been there. Here and there were marks and stains of the great burning on the ruins, that is true. But they were old marks and old stains. It is not true either what some of the priests say, that it is an island covered with fogs and enchantments. It is not. It is a great dead place, greater than any dead place we know. Everywhere in it there are god roads, though most are cracked and broken. Everywhere there are the ruins of the high towers of the gods. How shall I tell what I saw? I went carefully, my strung bow in my hand, my skin ready for danger. There should have been the wailings of spirits and the shrieks of demons, but there were not. It was very silent and sunny where I had landed. The wind and the rain and the birds that dropped seeds had done their work. The grass grew in the cracks of the broken stone. It is a fair island. No wonder the gods built there. If I had come there a god, I also would have built. There was a carved stone with cut letters, broken in half. I can read letters, but I could not understand these. They said, Ubtreas. 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 There was also the shattered image of a man, or a god. It had been made of white stone, and he wore his hair tied back like a woman's. His name was Ashing, as I read on the cracked half of a stone. I thought it wise to pray to Ashing, though I do not know that god. I saw a dog sitting on his haunches. His tongue was hanging out of his mouth. It looked as if he were laughing. He was a big dog, with a gray-brown coat, as big as a wolf. I sprang up and shouted at him, but he did not move. He just sat there, as if he were laughing. I did not like that. When I reached for a stone to throw, he moved swiftly out of the way of the stone. He was not afraid of me. He looked at me as if I were meat. No doubt I could have killed him with an arrow, but I did not know if there were others. I did not like that. Moreover, night was falling. I looked about me. Not far away there was a great broken god road leading north. The towers were high enough, but not so high, and while many of the dead houses were wrecked, there were some that stood. I went toward this god road, keeping to the heights of the ruins, while the dog followed. When I had reached the god road, I saw that there were others behind him. They were sure enough of me. They did not hurry. When I went into the dead house, they kept watch at the entrance. Doubtless they thought they would have a fine hunt. But a dog cannot open a door, and I knew from the books that the gods did not like to live on the ground, but on high. I had just found a door I could open when the dogs decided to rush. Ha! They were surprised when I shut the door in their faces. It was a good door, of strong metal. I could hear their foolish baying beyond it, but I did not stop to answer them. I was in darkness. I found stairs and climbed. There were many stairs, turning around till my head was dizzy. At the top was another door. The lock of it was broken, and I opened it and went in. Within, there was a place of great riches. The god who lived there must have been a powerful god. Few even of the windows had been broken. It was all as it had been. The great windows that looked over the city had not been broken at all, though they were dusty and streaked with many years. There were coverings on the floors, the colors not greatly faded, and the chairs were soft and deep. There were pictures upon the walls, very strange, very wonderful. I remember one of a bunch of flowers in a jar. If you came close to it, you could see nothing but bits of color. But if you stood away from it, the flowers might have been picked yesterday. It made my heart feel strange to look at this picture, and to look at the figure of a bird in some hard clay on a table, and see it so like our birds. Everywhere there were books and writings, many in tongues that I could not read. The god who lived there must have been a wise god and full of knowledge. I felt I had right there, as I sought knowledge also. Nevertheless, it was strange. There was a washing place, but no water. Perhaps the gods washed in air. There was a cooking place, but no wood. And though there was a machine to cook food, there was no place to put fire in it. Nor were there candles or lamps. There were things that looked like lamps, but they had neither oil nor wick. All these things were magic. But I touched them and lived. The magic had gone out of them. It was close and dry and dusty in their house of the gods. I have said the magic was gone, but that is not true. It had gone from the magic things, but it had not gone from the place. I felt the spirits about me, weighing upon me. Nor had I ever slept in a dead place before. And yet tonight, I must sleep there. When I thought of it, my tongue felt dry in my throat. In spite of my wish for knowledge, almost I would have gone down again and faced the dogs. But I did not. I had not gone through all the rooms when the darkness fell. When it fell, I went back to the big room looking over the city and made fire. There was a place to make fire and a box with wood in it, though I do not think they cooked there. I wrapped myself in a floor covering and slept in front of the fire. I was very tired. Now, I tell what is very strong magic. I woke in the midst of the night. When I woke, the fire had gone out, and I was cold. It seemed to me that all around me there were whisperings and voices. I closed my eyes to shut them out. Some will say that I slept again, but I do not think that I slept. I could feel the spirits drawing my spirit out of my body as a fish is drawn on a line. Why should I lie about it? I am a priest and the son of a priest. If there are spirits, as they say, in the small dead places near us, what spirits must there not be in that great place of the gods? And would they not wish to speak after such long years? I had stepped out of my body. I could see my body asleep in front of the cold fire, but it was not I. I was drawn to look out upon the city of the gods. It should have been dark, for it was night, but it was not dark. Everywhere there were lights. Lines of light, circles and blurs of light. 10,000 torches would not have been the same. The sky itself was alight. You could barely see the stars for the glow in the sky. I thought to myself, this is strong magic, and trembled. There was a roaring in my ears like the rushing of rivers. Then my eyes grew used to the light, and my ears to the sound. I knew that I was seeing the city as it had been when the gods were alive. That was a sight indeed. Yes, that was a sight. I could not have seen it in the body. My body would have died. Everywhere went the gods, on foot and in chariots. There were gods beyond number and counting, and their chariots blocked the streets. They had turned night to day for their pleasure. They did not sleep with the sun. The noise of their coming and going was the noise of many waters. It was magic what they could do. It was magic what they did. I looked out of another window. The great vines of their bridges were mended, and the god roads went east and west, restless. Restless were the gods, and always in motion. They burrowed tunnels under rivers. They flew in the air. With unbelievable tools, they did giant works. No part of the earth was safe from them, for if they wished for a thing, they summoned it from the other side of the world. And always, as they labored and rested, as they feasted and made love, there was a drum in their ears, the pulse of the giant city, beating and beating like a man's heart. Were they happy? What is happiness to the gods? They were great. They were mighty. They were wonderful and terrible. As I looked upon them and their magic, I felt like a child. A little more, it seemed to me, and they would pull down the moon from the sky. I saw them with wisdom beyond wisdom, and knowledge beyond knowledge. And yet, not all they did was well done. Even I could see that. And yet their wisdom could not but grow until all was peace. Then I saw their fate come upon them. I woke in the morning. I was hungry, but I did not think first of my hunger, for my heart was perplexed and confused. I knew the reason for the dead places, but I did not see why it had happened. It seemed to me it should not have happened, with all the magic they had. I went through the house looking for an answer. Then I saw the dead god. He was sitting in his chair by the window in a room I had not entered before. And at the first moment, I thought that he was alive. Then I saw the skin on the back of his hand. It was like dry leather. The room was shut, hot and dry. No doubt that had kept him as he was. At first, I was afraid to approach him. Then the fear left me. He was sitting, looking out over the city. He was dressed in the clothes of the gods. His age was neither young nor old. I could not tell his age, but there was wisdom in his face and great sadness. You could see that he would not have run away. He had sat at his window watching his city die. Then he himself had died. But it is better to lose one's life than one spirit. And you could see from the face that his spirit had not been lost. I knew that if I touched him, he would fall into dust. And yet, there was something unconquered in the face. That is all of my story. For then I knew. He was a man. I knew then that they had been men, neither gods nor demons. It is a great knowledge, hard to tell and believe. They were men. They went a dark road, but they were men. I had no fear after that. I had no fear of going home, though twice I fought off the dogs, and once I was hunted for 2 days by the forest people. When I saw my father again, I prayed and was purified. He touched my lips and my breast. You went away a boy. You come back a man and a priest. Father, they were men. I have been in the place of the gods and seen it. Now slay me if it is the law. But still, I know they were men. The law is not always the same shape. You have done what you have done. I could not have done it in my time. But you come after me. Tell. I told, and he listened. After that, I wished to tell all the people, but he showed me otherwise. If you eat too much truth at once, you may die of the truth. It was not idly that our fathers forbade the dead places. He was right. It is better the truth should come out little by little. I have learned that, being a priest. Perhaps in the old days they ate knowledge too fast. Nevertheless, we make a beginning. It is not for the metal alone we go to the dead places now. There are the books and the writings. They are hard to learn, and the magic tools are broken. But we can look at them and wonder. At least we make a beginning. And when I am chief priest, we shall go beyond the great river. We shall go to the place of the gods, the place New York, not one man, but a company. We shall look for the images of the gods and find the god Ashen and the others, the gods Lincoln and Biltmore and Moses. But they were men who built the city, not gods or demons. They were men. I remember the dead man's face. They were men who were here before us. We must build again.
You have just heard J.O. Sanders in By the Waters of Babylon, by Stephen Vincent Benet. Chris Tsakas was recordist, and Jamie Cerniglia, the mixer. Special thanks to Richard Castellanos.